You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. On today's program, we're presenting excerpts from last weekend's Project Censored Awards ceremony, honoring the journalists who uncovered the most relevant but underreported news stories of 2003. We continue now with the handing out of the awards, emceed by Pacifica radio host Larry Binsky.
Our first presenter is Chris Salvano.
Story number one this evening is the plan for global domination. This is a story that was brought forward by David Armstrong in Harper's Magazine, October 2002. Robert Dreyfus in Mother Jones, March 2003. And John Pilger on his Pilger.com website in December 2002. Tonight we're also going to recognize Jim Loeb, who has written on this issue since December 2001. But tonight, I'm honored to present this year's number one award to David Armstrong and Robert Dreyfus.
Hello, thank you very much. It's very nice to be here. It's a very nice honor. This article, the article I did for Harper's, has really taken on a life of its own. Just days after it appeared last September, the Bush administration unveiled its new national security strategy, which effectively validated many of the piece's main themes. The security strategy made clear the administration's intent on pursuing a policy of preemption aimed at ensuring U.S. dominance. The article quickly became the subject of innumerable radio and TV segments, newspaper, magazine articles, and even made its way into the congressional record as part of the debate on during the run-up to the war with Iraq. It wasn't long before the major media began to come around to the main point presented in the article. Publications that had originally rejected the piece's main premise soon made a virtual mantra of the notion that the administration's ostensibly new security strategy was in fact little more than a warmed over version of a plan originally prepared and presented during the first Bush administration, then presented as a means of ensuring U.S. dominance in the wake of the end of the Cold War, the collapse of the Soviet Union. Now, however, it was presented as the answer to the terrorist threat. Over time, this article has helped to substantially shape the understanding of this administration's foreign policy, its agenda in the war on terrorism. Events such as this have helped and contributed to that process by continuing to get the word out. And in that spirit, I gratefully accept this award. Thank you very much.
I'd also like to thank all of the students and everyone else involved with the Project Censored. I can't remember too many articles I've written that got more attention than this article from Mother Jones, which came out just the beginning of this year. I think it's pretty widely recognized now that the United States is well on the way toward establishing a kind of imperial presence around the world, and to a very significant degree, the fulcrum for that imperial presence is going to be the Persian Gulf, not because the oil companies want to make a lot of money there, although many of them will and have, of course, in the past. In fact, one of the points I made in my Mother Jones story was that the American oil companies, Exxon and Mobil and Chevron, Texaco and others, were perhaps surprisingly against the war. Pretty much uniformly, none of them wanted this war to happen. But the reason the United States went to war in the Gulf was not really so these companies could make money, but so the United States could exercise a kind of strategic control over a resource that would give the United States enormous leverage against China, against Russia, against even the Europeans, who, to the extent they'd like to be independent of the United States, need that access to oil, which can now be not only guaranteed by the United States, but if need be, denied in terms of the power we have in the region from essentially the Red Sea through Central Asia. I think, however, one of the misconceptions about this story is that there was some conspiracy involving a handful of neoconservatives who pulled this off. In fact, this is something that has emerged over a period of decades, beginning, I think I argued in my piece, in the 1970s when President Carter proclaimed the Persian Gulf to be a region of American supremacy. And over the past 30 years, the United States has built this presence up to the point where what happened in Iraq in the past 12 months is not so much a radical departure, but the culmination of that effort. And I think what I want to argue, therefore, is that if we focus on the Project for a New American Century or Richard Perle or the rest of them, we're making a big mistake. In fact, I know all these people. I spent the last year talking to them constantly. I know them all personally on a first-name basis, and they know me. They're really more Keystone Cops than global conspirators. And in fact, what's happened now is that since the end of the Cold War, the United States is simply expanding to fill a vacuum. And that vacuum is going to continue to be filled by, believe it or not, the next administration, whether it's Republican or Democratic. I do think it's important to beat President Bush next year because it's sort of the radical manifestation of this American imperial tendency. But it's one that President Wesley Clark will carry out just as happily as President Bush has done, but perhaps in a more gentle and allied fashion. So I hope that people look toward next year with the long view in mind and not simply the short-term view about the president's lies and the crisis that developed since that we went into Iraq a few months ago. Thank you very much.
Our next presenter is Christina Kutaya.
It is my great honor to present several awards this evening to four outstanding writers for their hard work and who continue to shed light on an otherwise dark media. Story number two, Homeland Security Threatens Civil Liberties, was first brought to our attention by Alex Jones, originally featured on Infowars.com, Rents.com, and Global Outlook Volume 4. Also, Frank Morales, published in Global Outlook Winter 2003. And accepting the awards for Charles Lewis and Adam Mayle, we have Alex Knott, all from the Center for Public Integrity.
I want to thank Project Censored. I had read several volumes over the years and gotten a lot of great guests from our syndicated radio show and for what we do at Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com. And one of the last speakers talked about, it's not George Bush, it's not Dick Cheney. They are. They're errand boys, they're puppets for the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned us about. And let me tell you something. These people have said, Rand Corporation and others have said, the entire economy will be prisons, police in black ski masks, a Nazi Germany-like nightmare. It makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up to talk about it, to read what's in Patriot Act 1 and 2, to see what Homeland Security does, Victory Act 1 and 2. We have got to get the word out now. We have got to warn everybody because this military-industrial complex and their PNAC and their NORTHCOM plans state that they will carry out the terror, that they will engineer the crises so that they can offer their solution. It's been done throughout history. The good news is that right in my hometown of Austin, Texas, we just threw out the Patriot Act. It's over 400 cities. It's over 400 cities. It's not 170. It's not 250. It's over 400 cities and towns. That's being censored. It's now three states with about three or four others about to repudiate it. We have a Bill of Rights culture, a liberty culture growing, and across the board, in radio interviews I do and on my own syndicated show, liberals, conservatives, black, white, old, young, they know it's tyranny. They know George Bush wants to be a dictator, and people are waking up everywhere. So be part of history. Be part of history, educate yourselves on the facts, research the truth, and then get out there and speak out to everyone in your community about history, that powerful men and powerful people want more control, and it's happening again, and it can happen in America. If we don't do this, we're delivering our children and our culture and our society into the pit of a New World Order global system of complete tyranny. And if America falls, the rest of the world will be swallowed by this neo-fascism that will make Brave New World in 1984 look like a cakewalk. Thank you so much for being here, and thank you for standing up against tyranny. Infowars.com.
I'd just like to thank Project Censored for the award on behalf of Charles Lewis, Adam Malay, and the Center for Public Integrity. When we first received draft legislation, which was the Patriot Act II, we were concerned about actually putting it out there. You know, a lot of us questioned it and the provisions that were in it. But you answered that question tonight. Thanks.
My name is Frank Morales. I'm from Lower East Side, New York. I'm a squatter since 1985, an Episcopal priest. I wrote a piece for Global Outlook magazine entitled Pentagon Declares War on America, dealt with, I meant that literally, which deals with under the operations other than war doctrine and the consolidation of the military and the police within America with the imminent repeal of the Posse Comitatus Act. Just this past week, there was more talk of that, which will completely eliminate any distinction between the police and the military in America, the institutionalization of NORTHCOM, a domestic military command, which is celebrating its one-year anniversary this past week. We're looking at, you know, what Alex was referring to, which is the literal realization of a military police state in America. The war on terrorism, particularly in its homeland defense manifestation, is a thin cover for the war on dissent. Homeland Defense, I wrote a piece for Covert Action in 99 because the euphemism of Homeland Defense was being tossed around at the Pentagon at that time. At that time, Homeland Defense was very clearly about civil disturbance suppression, growing out of an extension of the Garden Plot operation. Written extensively about this in the book, you'll see references to places you can get more information about this. Last thing I'd like to say is that we can't get bogged down and get paranoid about these things, but we have to take action. In New York City right now, we're forming a group which is about demilitarizing the police in preparation for the RNC convention in August. Now, what we mean by that is to examine the ways in which the police acquire so-called non-lethal weapons through the public contracts, a recodification of Posse Comitatus locally, and various other means that we can preempt their ability to preempt us. So we need to get involved in some concrete actions so we can push these things back. Okay, all power to the imagination. Thank you.
Yes, good job.
Our next Sonoma State student presenter is Lindsay Brage.
Hi, story number three, U.S. illegally removes pages from the Iraq UN report, was originally brought forth by Andreas Zumach in a German newspaper, December 19th, 2002. And was covered by Amy Goodman in on Democracy Now!, and it was covered by Michael I. Nyman in the March-April 2003 issue of The Humanist and January 9th, 2003 of Art Voice. It is my pleasure to present this award to Michael Nyman.
In 1989, my work was recognized by Project Censored. At that time, I had gone into Costa Rica's remote Osa Peninsula, chasing a story about environmental degradation. This time around, the work was a lot easier. I pretty much spent a few hours in front of my computer. I had woken up one morning while on the road and listened to Amy Goodman's excellent Democracy Now! Program, which is not available in my hometown of Buffalo, and heard her interviewing Andreas Zumach. I went home, did some work on the internet, chased down a few stories, put some background information in, and wrote the story up for my local weekly newspaper, Art Voice, where I have a weekly column. The focus of my story was, why don't we hear Amy Goodman in Buffalo? Why don't we get stories like this that are clearly important to us as we're marching off to war based on misinformation and no information? And I ran the story in Art Voice. A few months later, The Humanist, which also runs various stories of mine, contacted me and told me they wanted to run that story nationally. And I said, well, it's an old story, you know, March, April edition, it's an old story. And they go, no, it's not. We've never heard this. Nobody's heard this. And the story ran in The Humanist. By now, it's 4 months old. And a lot of the information that's in that story and that was in that Iraqi report, you know, was years old. The story ran in The Humanist, and to date, just to follow up, the story still hasn't run in the mainstream press in this country. And we went off to war based on this misinformation, based on the missing information, based on incomplete understanding, we went off to war. I was horrified to hear that I was winning a Project Censored Award this time around, because to me, I mean, it meant that the story still hadn't gotten out. And the last time I won a Project Censored Award, I actually had to go off into the bush and chase a story and do some work and experience discomfort, you know, associated with journalism. This time I sat in front of my computer for 3 hours, and my question as I leave this stage, because I know we need to speed these things up a little bit, is, you know, why am I winning this award? I'm winning this award because very few people in this country are practicing the art of journalism. This is a dying profession. So I can sit... I mean, as a journalist and as a journalism professor, you know, I am horrified that I can sit in front of my computer for 3 hours and find a story that any one of thousands of journalists in this country could have found and should have written about. I'd like to thank Project Censored from deep within my soul for keeping this program alive and running and growing. And I'd also like to thank journalists, you know, like Amy Goodman, like Andre Szumak, like Bill Weinberg from World War III Report, which also covered this story, you know, for keeping these stories out there also. So thank you very much.
Our next presenter is Adam Stutz.
Story number 4 had to do with Rumsfeld's plan to provoke terrorists. The story was originally published in the Moscow Times as well as the St. Petersburg Times and was picked up by Counterpunch in November 2002. It is my great honor to present the award for story number 4 to Mr. Chris Floyd.
Thank you. Years ago, during the run-up to the first Gulf War, I wrote a short piece about the sea of propaganda that was flooding the country and the difficulty of cutting through to the blood and iron reality behind it all. This is the whole piece that I wrote then. I think we're living in a world of lies, lies that don't even know they are lies because they are the children and grandchildren of lies. And here we are again. One of the hardest things about doing stories like the ones honored here tonight is that the reality of our world is buried under so many layers of official deception and well-cultivated public ignorance about our history and our political system. Even if you break through somehow momentarily and hold up a fragment of the truth, most people have no context for dealing with it anymore. It's like a bolt from the blue, they can't process the information. And so the sea of lies closes over us again and again and again. But I don't know what else we can do except to keep telling as much of the truth as we can find out to anyone who will listen, reclaiming reality, fragment by fragment, one person at a time. It's an endless task, maybe a hopeless task, but the alternative is a surrender to the worst elements in our society and in ourselves. Thank you.
Our fifth presenter is Joni Wallant.
Story number 5 is the current effort to make unions disappear. The story was brought forth in articles written by Lee Sestar in the International Socialist Review, September 2002, by David Bacon in War Times, October-November 2002 issue, by Anne-Marie Cusack in The Progressive, February 2003, and by Robert L. Borisage in The American Patriot, March 2003. It is my pleasure to present this award to Anne-Marie Cusack and Lee Sestar, story number 5.
Thanks very much for Project Censored, which is, I think, the only media award ceremony in America that could reunite people who shared a jail cell, in this case, Seattle, in 1999 at the World Trade Organization protest. And there's a thread there, which is that the ILWU that day, the Longshore Workers Union, shut down the West Coast. And the story that I'm receiving an award for was about the then impending lockout of those same workers. And the two are very much connected. The aim of the operation, which was worked on for years with participation from all corners of corporate America and the government, was to decisively try to break the power of unions in this country. Since then, we've seen literally tens and tens of billions of dollars in labor concessions extracted by unions from corporations in the course of the recession. It stuns me that a movement of 14 million has a story that can be censored so easily, but that's the case. That's why it's so important that Project Censored exists. I thank the International Socialist Socialist Review for publishing my story, Socialist Worker, another alternative publication that I work for full-time, for publishing my work, and thank everybody here for turning out tonight. Thanks.
I'd also like to thank Project Censored, and I really enjoyed meeting the students tonight. I'm impressed with what they do, so thank you. My story, Brazen Boss, has appeared in The Progressive. It concerned the brazenness with which employers will violate the law in order to keep unions out of their workplaces. This is because in many cases, the workers really have, even though there is an NLRB, it's very hard to get their cases through the NLRB. It can take years and years, and by then, they've moved on to other jobs. The laws really don't have a lot of bite. I'd like to thank all those who helped make this story possible, particularly The Progressive and my editor, Matthew Rothschild, who is a talented and demanding editor, which I appreciate, Joe Hakim, who did the great photographs, and all those workers I talked to and visited with who suffered dismissals, fear of deportation, and physical abuse. Thanks very much, and I'm honored by this award. Thanks.
Our next presenter is John Bloomquist.
Story number 6, Closing Access to Information Technology, was brought forward by Arthur Stamoulos in the October 2002 edition of Dollars and Cents. I am honored tonight to present this award for story number 6 to Arthur Stamoulos.
Thank you, John. I want to thank Project Censored and Dollars and Cents for publishing my article. Thank you to my wife, Lauren Hook, and my good friend, Ellen Cohane, and to Hans Bennett and Insubordination Magazine. My article, Slamming Shut Open Access, was published in Dollars and Cents. It's online at dollarsandcents.org. And what it talked about is how if the cable and telephone monopolies get their way, the internet is going to have all the diversity of a shopping mall. The digital divide is going to grow wider, and independent community websites are going to get pushed further and further into the corners if they're allowed to exist at all. The only people who are going to stop it are the people in this room. I encourage people to visit www.mediatank.org, get involved with grassroots efforts to stop this. In the Bay Area, join Media Alliance. And if you're really interested, check out the website of the Center for Digital Democracy at democraticmedia.org. They've been covering this issue. You need to stay on top of it. People talk about censorship. We all go to the internet to get our news. You don't want the corporations completely controlling that. So thank you.
Our next presenter is Brittany Rowland.
Story number 7, Treaty Busting by the United States, was brought forth by Nicole Deller in her book, Rule of Power or Rule of Law, by Marilia Kelly in Connections, June 2002, by Eamon Martin in Asheville Global Report, June 2002, by John B. Anderson in The Nation, April 2002, and by John Vallew in Global Outlook, Summer 2002. I'm honored to present these awards tonight to Nicole Deller, Marilia Kelly, and Eamon Martin.
Thank you. I share the sentiments of all the people who've received rewards thus far for Project Censored, the students, and everyone here tonight. In continuation of the efforts at Imperial Presence that started us off this evening, we focus in this book and in the other articles from our number 7, U.S. policies turned against supporting international laws that would apply to all players in favor of unfettered military defense and in favor of ad hoc coalitions that are at their command. This is evidenced, as we describe, with the failure to ratify the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty, the failure to ratify the International Criminal Court Statute, the failure to ratify the treaty to ban landmines, the Kyoto Protocol, a transparency regime to improve biological weapons bans, also by violating treaties that we profess to hold very dear to our heart, the Non-Proliferation Treaty for Nuclear Weapons, and also the Biological Weapons Convention and the Chemical Weapons Convention. We believe that this is setting a terrible precedent. Other states have more rights under because of our violations and abrogations to do as they see fit. This is making the world far less safe by our preference for ad hoc military defense. We believe that the rule of law, which is something that's a cornerstone of our nation, is the best chance by committing to it and by strengthening it that all of us have for global security and for protecting all of our rights. Again, thank you.
I'm Mary Leah Kelly, Executive Director at Tri-Valley Cares in Livermore, California, and I really want to thank Project Censored and everyone here. I'll offer you two short updates on treaty busting by the Bush administration. First, while the United States scours Iraq looking for biological weapons labs, without publicity or fanfare here in the United States, the Department of Energy is building biowarfare agent facilities inside that is co-located with its nuclear weapons design laboratories here in Livermore, California, and in Los Alamos, New Mexico. These advanced biofacilities threaten the already fragile biological weapons convention of which Nicole just spoke. And also, a result could be the proliferation of biolabs, making the world more dangerous. On August 26, my organization, Tri-Valley Cares and Nuclear Watch of New Mexico, filed suit in federal district court to prevent these biolabs from going forward without any comprehensive environmental or proliferation analyses. My second update is the Bush administration's assault on the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Since we wrote the story in 2002, the Bush administration has moved forward with the development of a high-yield nuclear bunker-busting bomb called the Robust Nuclear Earth Penetrator, intended for use in the quote-unquote war on terror, as well as research on very low-yield nuclear bombs called mini-nukes. How cute, tiny Armageddons. These nuclear programs endanger the Non-Proliferation Treaty, which is already under assault and becoming very fragile by the nuclear weapons states' failure to meet their disarmament obligations. So therefore, our work to hold our government accountable to the law must continue. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. Thanks, Project Censored, for honoring Asheville Global Report with this award tonight. I do have to say right at this moment that this is pathetic. The greatest surrealist prophets couldn't foresee a day when there would be people like us celebrating censored news. The story that we contributed, the Netherlands being shocked, a lot of you may not know about this, about US proposals to invade that sovereign country in the event that any U.S. personnel were detained to be brought forward to the International Criminal Court, only registered on one Reuters Newswire article. Here our country was threatening to invade the Netherlands. How many people you knew about that? Very little, but you would think that it was kind of important, wouldn't you? And this is pathetic. Do you know what I do? I work for a grassroots newspaper that is all volunteer run. I'm a dishwasher. I work at a restaurant. Kendra Sarvati, who happened to get another award tonight, is a waitress. And the only reason that anybody knows about this story in the States is because a dishwasher and some waitresses and some laborers took the time because they thought it was important that you should know that your country was threatening to invade another country. This is wrong. This is wrong. Thank you. It's a queer pleasure to take this award. It's very strange to be here. I don't know. Keep abreast, keep informed, and remember that you're not just journalists, you're not just professionals, you're activists. The hour is not late, the hour is here, it's past here. We need to take our message and our news to as many people as possible at whatever sacrifice necessary. Thank you.
Eamon Martin writes for the Asheville Global Report. He's one of the journalists who covered what's been deemed the seventh most censored American news story of 2003, namely the U.S.'s efforts to block and undermine a variety of international treaties. He spoke at last weekend's 27th annual Project Censored Awards at Sonoma State University. For more info on the awards and to read the winning articles, you can go to www.projectcensored.org. On a final note tonight, this is our last week here at Peace Watch. Our program will come to an end this Friday after a week of specials, speeches, and material from our archives. We've thoroughly enjoyed producing this show over the past year, and we thank all of our listeners and supporters for their generous feedback and support, monetary and otherwise, which kept us going for so long. Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. Our producer is Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is T from the Pattersons taking the train to Tibet. We had production assistance from Matt Bradley and Sam Husseini. Thanks to Pete Caracas, RadioForAll.net, and Alex Mitchell at WebActive.com for web help. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. You can send your feedback to us at peacewatch@pacifica.org. You can also visit webactive.com to listen to archives of past Peace Watch programs. To get a copy of this show, call the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230. I'm Verna Avery Brown, the executive producer. Thank you for listening.